Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Alright, this may be a jazzy way of putting it, but the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah is happening this week.
The lesson of Hanukkah is that this darkness is actually an opportunity for us to spread light.
We'll take a look back to the Jazz Age and before at the Jewish history of Northwest Wisconsin. Plus,
I'm transgender and 57 years old.
She's a comedian who wants to clear up any misconceptions right up front.
Otherwise, some people get confused and distracted. They're like, I don't think she's really 57 years old.
We'll hear the comedy of Danielle Trollo. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
I'm not sure I'm comfortable sharing a restroom with someone that old.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
I'm transgender and 57 years old.
She's a comedian who wants to clear up any misconceptions right up front.
Otherwise, some people get confused and distracted. They're like, I don't think she's really 57 years old.
We'll hear the comedy of Danielle Trollo. Plus, all right, this may be a jazzy way of putting it, but the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah is happening this week.
The lesson of Hanukkah is that this darkness is actually an opportunity for us to spread light.
We'll take a look back to the Jazz Age and before at the Jewish history of Northwest Wisconsin. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. As you probably have seen from TV commercials or your neighbor's decorations, or maybe your own tradition, the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah is happening right now. And if it seems a little early, it is. The Jewish year is based on the lunar calendar, and this year the 8-day celebration that usually happens around Christmas started 3 days after Thanksgiving. The Jewish population in our region is fairly small, but is nonetheless vibrant and has a deep history, including in Northwest Wisconsin. Today, the community is served largely by Temple Israel of Duluth, which draws its membership from the greater Twin Ports and the surrounding area, including the Iron Range, the north and south shores of Lake Superior, as well as former residents who keep their affiliation with the synagogue, or, using the Yiddish word, the shul. The New York-based Chabad Lubavitch Group also has a branch in Duluth, and the city is also home to an Orthodox congregation, Addis Israel, which after more than 100 years continues to serve loyal worshipers despite a fire that destroyed their synagogue building on 3rd Street in Duluth in 2019. One of Chabad's most prominent activities around the area is to set up giant Hanukkah menorahs, the 8-branch candelabras with one light for each night and another candle to light them with. We caught up with Chabad's Rabbi Mindy Ross as he was lighting the one at Miller Hill Mall for the first night on Sunday. And having given the prayer, he graciously explained what the holiday is all about.
The Hanukkah story is a story of the mighty versus the weak, right? That the Jewish people were persecuted for their religion, and they said that they weren't allowed to, practice their Judaism, and definitely not in any spiritual way. Maybe culturally, but not spiritually.
And that was by an invading army. Just a suggestion.
Exactly. It was not a suggestion. It was government enforced, and the Jewish people were able to overcome that, culminating with coming back to the temple. And that's the real miracle of Hanukkah, is the miracle of the oil. The oil that they found in the temple was enough for one day, and during the original supply chain crisis, that they couldn't get oil for 8 days, but the miracle happened and the oil lasted for 8 days. And really, it's really about the message of the light, you know, of spreading light to one more, right? And every night of Hanukkah, we add one more. So if we have some light in us, make sure to share it with one more person.
And this happened a little while ago?
Yeah, a couple thousand years ago. People wonder how the Jewish people endured. is we celebrate a supply chain crisis from 2,000 years ago. That's what keeps us going, right? We found in that darkness, right, of the Jewish people being persecuted, we found light. So, you know, a lot of people are talking about that we live in dark times. And maybe the lesson of Hanukkah is that this darkness is actually an opportunity for us to spread light to one another.
Among those attending the menorah lighting at the mall were Sharon and Toby Markovich, whose names should be familiar, if for no other reason, as the name gracing the Wellness Center at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Both Toby and Sharon grew up in Superior and described the area as having had a rich Jewish history.
Definitely, yes. My grandparents came from Lithuania and Russia in the early 1900s, and we always asked them, why did you come to Superior? First they went to Ellis Island, they were in New York.
Is that necessarily on the map that takes you to Ellis Island, is it?
No. And for some reason, why were they attracted to Superior, Wisconsin? Well, because other relatives had come earlier. We never could ask those other relatives why they came to Superior. But it turned out that, of course, it was just as cold as it was in Russia and Lithuania.
So
and
they were used to it.
And we had a large Jewish population, three synagogues in town. One by one, they disappeared. Now people from Superior go to Duluth, to Temple Israel. But we had an Orthodox synagogue where I used to go to services with my grandma when I was a little girl. We would sit upstairs, and the rabbi downstairs would hear the women talking up in the balcony, and he'd, shah, shah. Toby and I were married at the Conservative Temple across the street. What was the name of the shul we were married?
The shul that we were married in?
Yeah.
It was just called the Superior Hebrew Congregation. We had three shuls, the one facing Hammond and around on 6th. Facing 6th, and then there was a little shul, which was the original shul right next door that they didn't use it. But when we were little kids, we used to go over there and drop matches out of the balcony.
One of the buildings is still there, or all of them?
None of them.
Or are they all gone?
They built another temple on Faxon and about 22nd Street, and that lasted until the population dwindled. They couldn't afford it.
Is that the one where the building's still there or not?
Yes.
What are some of the family names you remember?
Well, my family were the Wieners, Zelda and Yanko Wiener. My father's family were Kossoffs. They were from Russia. They lived in Duluth in a kind of a Jewish enclave around First Street and about 12th Avenue East. There was a little Jewish enclave there.
And my family were all the Popkins, and we all lived north of 5th Street to begin with in Superior. And then we were like the Jeffersons. We started moving on south.
Yeah, not east, but
not east, yeah.
No.
And not really up either.
No. Well, my grandpa and then my dad owned a furniture store in the north end of Superior, and that kept everybody going for until my grandpa died, and then my dad died, and then my uncle took it over, and a cousin took it over, and then he finally closed it when the big box stores drove him out of business.
What can you tell me about the photographer, Esther Bubley?
Oh, she was a good friend of Toby's mother.
My mother and my aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, we lived near the Bubleys down on 5th Street when, in fact, her father had a auto parts store right across the street from the furniture store.
Hmm. Do you know how she got interested in photography?
I don't know, but she became world famous.
Right, yes, which is why I'm mentioning her.
Right.
And people who, maybe they don't know her name, but they know her work.
Yeah.
Because you see so many of her images, particularly in what later was used in civil rights, because she had the white colored signs that she documented at the time. Right?
Yep.
Anybody else?
My cousin.
He wasn't quite superior.
No, he was Duluth, but close enough.
He made good a little
he,
bit. Huh?
He done good.
My brother, Danny Kossoff, who is living in Florida now, but he's involved in a lot of filmmaking, documentaries. He's been in public radio and TV. Anyway, he and Bob Dylan were going to the University of Minnesota at the same time. And Toby and I went down to visit my brother, and Toby asked him, "How's Bobby doing?" And Danny said, "We're really worried about him. He's in his room all the time. All he's doing is smoking pot and writing poetry." And we said, "Oh, gosh, we hope he's going to get better."
Yep.
Anyone else to come to mind? Or?
Well, Sharon's uncle, Dave Wiener, was a terrific athlete. He played for the Duluth Eskimos.
Okay. We just had a program about that.
Yeah. And he held the, I think it was the 440 Wisconsin High School track record that he set in like 1929 or 30 until 1960-something. He later became the local bookie.
The statute of limitations on that is passed. Right.
Well,
you would know. Yes.
He became deaf, completely deaf. When he was
That's
about,
not a bad thing considering that profession.
About 8 years old, 8 to 10. And he was severely deaf. He really, his career in sports came to an end when he was in boxing. And he couldn't hear the bell.
He knocked some guy
he
out.
He knocked some after the bell. He couldn't hear, you know, the bell. But this was during the Depression that he became a bookie because he could not get a job. And it turned out to be very lucrative for him.
He was a good one. I used to bet with him all the time.
Again, the statute of limitations
is
long. All right. Sharon and Toby Markovich aren't quite spring chickens, but they're absolute youngsters compared to Isabel Tucson, who, just before Hanukkah began, celebrated her 104th birthday at her superior home, barely a mile away from where she grew up. She shared some of her stories of the Jewish community back then when we visited with her in 2019 for her 102nd birthday.
It was a nice, safe place to grow up in. And at that time, we had quite a few Jewish families here, so that we didn't have to go to Duluth, you know, for all our friends. We had a lot of stores on Tower Avenue, and you could hardly walk Tower Avenue on Thursday nights. It was so crowded. You couldn't find a parking spot on Tower Avenue, and the stores were open till 9.
And any particular?
A lot of restaurants. Every block had a restaurant. So you could stop at every block and you could get a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, anything you wanted. We had a lot of dress shops. We had a lot of men's stores. I mean, men's stores, not in department stores, but single stores.
It's a little bit different than it is now.
Very different.
Was this during Prohibition?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you guys deliver for the Moonshiners?
Not me.
No. Who did?
No, that was my cousin and her dad. The kids walked down the streets like they were carrying pop. Everybody knew they were doing that. It was very wide open, I guess. My dad never did anything like that. He had a grocery store on Main Street. Mm-hmm. And he looked down on that. Boy, he thought it was terrible.
You know, I always wondered, what did you do on Passover?
We used to have all our Passover dinners at my Zadie and Bubby's. And then all of us would sit around the big table. And my aunts were in the high school at that time, and I was eighth grade. And we'd put Love Story magazines in our lap and look down like we were being very pious.
But what I meant was the Passover service, you're supposed to have wine. So what did you do during the Prohibition? Did you have wine?
We all had wine. They made their own. My mother always made her own wine. And I didn't know anybody who didn't.
Now, your Zadie had to be, I don't suppose you know what year he was born, but he would be your grandfather, so he would be quite a bit older than you.
Oh, my grandpa was in his, at least in his 60s, early 70s. And
so he would have been born sometime in the mid-19th century.
Well, in Europe.
Right.
So I don't know. They all came from Lithuania. You have old-timers, you know, in Superior. At that time, they used to be peddlers, most of them. And my grandpa had this tailor shop, and when the weather wasn't bad or if they didn't feel like going out, they all sat on chairs in my grandfather's tailor shop, which was right next door to a bar. And I remember one time I got a quarter and a half-gallon jar. I had to go over and buy some beer for them. And went through the back door, and I spilled some. And my grandpa said I was careless.
Wait, was this during Prohibition?
No, because the bar was there.
Oh, okay, good. So you didn't break any laws. So going to high school.
In high school, what was interesting, Jewish kids could not join no sororities or fraternities. They never allowed us in there.
For college or for high school?
High school.
So there were sororities and fraternity.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but not for you.
I could join the clubs like the swimming clubs or the school clubs, but I couldn't go into the school sororities or anything because Jewish kids weren't allowed. And that was in public school.
Right. So, but is that where you knew Richard Bong?
Richard Bong was in the study hall with me, but I never was in a class with him. And he was very, very quiet, so quiet you wouldn't know he was there. And we talked because I always talked.
That was Isabel Tucson of Superior, speaking with us shortly after her 102nd birthday in 2019. Last month, she turned 104. Happy birthday, Isabel, and happy Hanukkah. To hear Isabel Tucson talk about her grandfather means you're going back in time deep into the 1800s. But Jewish residents weren't limited to just the area's biggest cities then or now. There were synagogues in Hurley, Ironwood, and Ashland, and several in Superior. Though all have merged with other congregations and ultimately closed, many of their religious artifacts were brought to Duluth, though some were lost in the 2019 fire at Addis, Israel. There are also cemeteries still maintained by the descendants of congregants and other members of the larger Jewish community, and even without a synagogue building, Jewish residents of the area still gather together. One of them is Mark Abels Allison of Washburn, a transplant who found himself joining a small but embracing community.
I grew up in mid-Michigan, and my wife's family kind of brought us to the region. Lisa's mom, who lived in Duluth, shared with us a position opening here in Washburn, the city of Washburn in Bayfield County. And I applied 20 plus years ago, and that's what brought us closer to Lisa's family.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised to learn there was or wasn't a Jewish community, or that there had been, or that you had to go to Duluth?
Well, I was aware of the temple and the Jewish community in Duluth, and also aware of several individuals in the Schwamigan Bay area. There's a small but a vibrant Jewish community in both Ashland and Bayfield counties. The groups get together a couple times every year. Historically, we have. The past couple of years have been more difficult, although we continue to get together with some outdoor projects and efforts.
Mm-hmm. And Rabbi David Steinberg of Temple Israel in Duluth has made visits there a couple of times a year or so.
Yeah, it's very nice. The rabbi will come out and do services in somebody's home. But then we also usually get together for a Passover Seder. We've had them at local churches as well as at people's homes. Most recently, we're working on a kind of a, not restoration, but an improvement project at the Jewish cemetery in Ashland. And we're just working on some plantings and some rocks, kind of sculpturing for cemetery beautification.
Mm-hmm. So even though you don't have a active congregation and a building for one, it sounds like you still have a vibrant community?
I would say it's a vibrant community, yes. Yeah, vibrant and supportive community that keeps in touch.
That was Mark Abels Allison, a member of, can we say it once more, the small but vibrant Jewish community in Northwest Wisconsin and the Twin Ports. Coming up,
big round of applause, everyone, for Danielle Trump.
A comedian who addresses any potential misunderstandings right up front.
Hi, I'm Danielle.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you met our next guest 15 years ago, you would have met a very different person. And by that, I mean a successful tech entrepreneur who even sold a URL to some guy named Mark Zuckerberg. Today, Danielle Trollo is a comedian, and I'll let her explain any other changes between then and now. She's the regular host of the Pro Comedy Tour, sponsored by Dublin's in Duluth, and performs at clubs around the Twin Ports and the country, even winning the Miami round of Florida's Funniest. We're told she's also the number one comic on the dark web, which is just fine here on the radio because you don't have to turn on the lights. So, welcome to Simply Superior, Danielle Trollo.
Hi, it's wonderful to be here. Hi.
So you typically start your routine clearing up any misconceptions right up front. What would those be? And tell me how you put it.
Oh, yes. So I'm transgender and 57 years old. I always need to get that out into the open right away because otherwise people tend to get confused and they're like, I'm not sure she's really 57 years old.
Right.
Transgender, we could see that a mile away, but I'm not sure I'm comfortable sharing a restroom with someone that old.
Well, again, who knows what we can see on the radio. But I have to say, 57 is a bit younger than baby boomers, but I'm going to guess older than a lot of the comedy club crowd. So how do you stay culturally relevant to them? And how do you know what they're talking about?
Well, that's true. I'm probably twice as old as most of the comics. A lot of them are in the 30s, so I'm probably a couple decades older. You know, I don't really try to stay relevant to them. I mean, practice getting up there and in front of people and listening to what they're laughing at. But at the same time, I do talk about things that I think are authentic to my experience and the things that I think are funny. And if I can then hone that to keep other people laughing, then that's a success.
Mm-hmm. What is 57, by the way? It's not baby boomer, and it's certainly nowhere near Gen X. Gen X is like the whole new animal that those people that we're talking about.
Yeah, here. From what I understand, 1964, which is when I was born, is 1 year after the boomers, or else I'm right there on the cusp. It's kind of like being a Capricorn and a Taurus. I'm not 100% sure what that transition point is, but I've been in transition my whole life, so.
Well, let's go back to one of those transitions, your tech career, or I guess maybe your telescopic career. You were the founder of the online retailers binoculars.com, telescopes.com, and peepers.com. So were you a stargazer or an internet person who happened to look at the sky?
I started off in traditional retail with vintage clothing, which is a fancy way of saying used clothing. And I was horrible at selling clothing. But we did have something in that store. We had sunglasses, and people liked the sunglasses. So I got rid of the clothing and moved to what you'd call like a Class D mall, or we affectionately called the post-nuclear plaza. But, you know, it worked. The foot traffic picked up and we started doing traditional retail there. And then I always wanted to become less reliant on foot traffic and local traffic. And one of the reasons, frankly, is because I knew I was transgender even back then. And I was worried that if I was too reliant on face-to-face transactions, that eventually I would have no customers, which ultimately turned out to probably be inaccurate in the late 2010s and that time. But back then, it was not a good thing to be a transgender person. So I was sort of trying to position my business so that I could continue to make a living. So I kept trying to find ways of moving away from just local customers. And first I tried mail order catalogs and I lost a lot of money that way. But then in 1996, I read about this thing called the World Wide Web, which promised that you'd be able to put up an ad. And when people saw that ad, they would come into your virtual store and you'd be able to track that person from viewing that ad into your store. But not only that, the promise was that I read in this issue of, I think it was PC World Magazine back in 1993, that you'd be able to tell if that person actually bought something. So then marketing...
I need to interject here to say that I remember articles like that, but I also remember PC Magazine being extremely wrong. Like, they thought that the Apple Newton, if you remember that, was going to be the device of the future. This was this little Apple... What do you want to call it? It was a pad.
It was. I remember the Newton. Yeah. I remember
And you could use your handwriting and write things on it, and it would translate it into real-life letters, and nobody went for that at all.
It kind of turned into the iPad later. But, yeah, it failed. The Newton failed.
Right. So you believe PC Magazine, though, about this thing called the Internet.
Yeah. So in 1996, I paid a guy $100 to put this web page up, and it was all text. It was no pictures, no online ordering, no email. And the URL of that original website was www.digitaldiscounts/tilde-peepers-sunglasses.html. Try telling that to people over the phone.
I think that's where your comedy routine started, but go ahead. Yes.
And so, yeah, that's where I first learned the value of a good domain name, was trying to put that on a business card. Oh, my goodness. So that was November of 1996, and it got picked up. That single text page got picked up by this new, brand new search engine called Yahoo.
In December, almost as good as Hotbot.
Yes. I think there were,
Hotbot was better than Yahoo in the early days. But go ahead, I'll shut up.
I have to ask what you were looking for on Hotbot there, Robin.
Everything. Come on, I'm a journalist.
And so December of 1996, the phone on the wall rang in the Holiday Center. That's where this store was in the Holiday Center Mall in Duluth. As soon as you got off the glass elevator by the elevators to the Holiday Inn. So the phone on the wall rang, and the guy on the phone said, "How much is your Ray-Ban round metal?" And I said, "It's $112. He said, "That's a great price. I'll take it." I said, "Okay, I'll give you directions to come down to the store." He said, "Can't you ship it to me? I'm in New York." I said, "Oh, you must have been staying in the Holiday Inn." He said, "No, I've never heard of Duluth in my whole life. I found you on the internet." And I thought, well, that's fraud. But I went through the motions and I grabbed a piece of paper and I wrote down his name and his credit card number and his address. And it came up approved. And so I actually had to ship him the product. So I found a box out of the garbage, packaged it, I shipped off that package, and the guy kept the glasses. And that was my first internet sale in December of 1996. And then in January, sales doubled, meaning I sold two pair. And then in February, I sold four pair. And then in March, I sold eight pair. And in April, sales doubled again. In May, they doubled again. That's when, you know, the light went on in my head that there probably is something to this internet thing. So I taught myself how to make a web page. I actually bought a computer and slowly built it up.
We're speaking with tech entrepreneur and comedian Danielle Trollo of Duluth. And I think we just got a history of the early days and growth of the internet. You mentioned something about your face-to-face sales. You were, a bit trepidatious about it. But about that time, LGBTQ are not all the same things, but you had Queer Eye come out. And that seemed to be a sea change in the way the general public perceived gender and professionalism.
I remember that, and I thought that was awesome. I still was scared, though. I was afraid I would lose the business. I was afraid I would lose friends, because I grew up in an era in the late 60s and the 70s where you know, transgender people were considered mentally ill and they were put away in mental institutions, given electroshock therapy, given psychotropic drugs, and ridiculed, quite frankly. I mean, if you look at like Renee Richards or some of the early transgender pioneers, they had a pretty difficult time. And I just, and I would go to the library, right? I would go to the library and read about it. And when I, the only things I could find back in the late 60s and early 70s, or even late 70s and even early 80s when I was in high school, were books on abnormal psychology, and you'd flip to the page on, or you'd try to find, transgender was even the word back then. Mm-hmm. And so you'd find things right next to pedophile or paraphilia or fetishes. And as a kid, seeing that kind of thing in an abnormal psych book, you just kind of go, huh, I think I'm going to keep this to myself.
You've got a routine, we're going to play it in a bit, that talks about Bruce Jenner, a.k.a. Caitlyn Jenner. And is that autobiographical? In other words, you say that you were influenced by Bruce. Is that true?
Yes, I actually came out before Caitlyn did, although she's fine with people referring to her as Bruce when she was Bruce. Some transgender people don't like it at all. They find it quite offensive or even traumatic to hear their previous, what they would call the dead name, what we call the dead mm-hmm. name. But Caitlyn has been very clear that it's fine to refer to her history as Bruce and when she won the decathlon at the Montreal Olympics. And yes, I definitely ate Wheaties in 1976. I sat at the table and I looked at Bruce Jenner's picture on the Wheaties boxes, but nobody knew then that Bruce was transgender. But I was out for track. I ran track and cross country in elementary school and in junior high and high school. And so watching Bruce Jenner in the Olympics was inspirational. I just didn't realize how inspirational it would eventually be.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Daniel Trollo of Duluth. And before I ask you about the switch to comedy, let's hear some of the comedy. Here's a bit from one of your routines.
Your next comic coming to the stage is your next comic in the Seattle International Comedy Contest. Big round of applause, everyone, for Danielle Trollo!
Hi, I'm Danielle. I'm transgender and 57 years old. I always need to get that out into the open because otherwise some people get confused and distracted. They're like, I don't think she's really 57 years old. Sure, transgender, I could see that a mile away, but I'm not sure I'm comfortable sharing a restroom with someone that old. So yes, I am transgender, and I am 57, which means I finally stopped shopping at Forever 21. Now I'm shopping at damn near 60. But there is a new store I found here at the Pike's Place Market that I love called the Grand Canyon. I don't know if you guys have been in there. It's a lot like the Gap, but deeper. So for 50 years I was socialized as male. It's kind of like being raised by wolves. I feel like I've been grunting my whole life and now I'm trying to learn French. But I know that no matter how hard I try, I'm always going to have some masculine traits I just can't shake, like expecting people to listen to me when I talk. Another trait that I hope I never lose is my love of silly dad jokes. I love silly dad jokes. My daughter, I have two kids. My daughter told me that out here in Seattle at Pioneer Park, I could see a horse-drawn carriage. I said, wow, I didn't realize horses knew how to draw. So here's another one. My oldest daughter last week asked me if I was going to have laser eye surgery. I said, heck yeah, I want laser eyes. Something for our cats to play with. I remember when I was a kid back in 1976, I was 12 years old. I actually remember watching the 1976 Montreal Olympics. I remember watching then Bruce Jenner win a gold medal in the decathlon and then appear on Wheaties boxes as the world's greatest athlete. I mean, back then, what little boy didn't want to grow up to be like Bruce Jenner? I finally get it!
And that was our guest, comedian Daniel Trollo of Duluth, performing at the 2021 Seattle International Comedy Competition. So, what in the world brought you out on the comedy? You talk about coming out. What brought you out to the comedic stage?
Three things. There were three things, as in a good joke usually has three parts to it. First, if you want to change people's mind, if you want to open people up to new ways of thinking, there's really only two good ways to do that. The first is to be somebody's trusted advisor. And to be a trusted advisor, it takes decades, and I don't have that kind of time. So the second method that I've relied on is helping people laugh. Laughing releases dopamine, endorphins, oxytocin, and that opens up the synapses in people's brains to being willing to consider new ways of thinking. And so in a divided world, I think that laughing then makes me as a transgender woman less threatening to people. The other reason is that I was petrified by it. When the thought came to me that I might actually have to get up on stage and tell a joke, I was so scared. I was just frightened.
When and where was that?
Well, that was at a funeral.
Of course.
Yeah, so I was sitting at a funeral and I thought of a joke and I thought, you know, the only way I'm going to be able to ever tell this joke, because I'm not going to be able to tell it at this funeral, is if I ever get up on stage. And I thought, well, I'll never get up on stage. And I thought, well, why not? Why won't I get up on stage? Well, because, and then I thought, well, I mean, if it's not going to kill me, I probably should do it.
And what was that joke? You can't make us this far without telling us.
So, it's a little bit dated now. Other people have done similar jokes, but I think it still has a sense to it. So I was at the funeral of a local farmer who had died while he was out plowing the field. His tractor had tipped over and he was killed. And at the funeral, everybody kept saying, well, at least he died doing what he loved. And I couldn't help but thinking, I did not realize that he loved having his chest crushed by a tractor.
Ew.
Yeah, so there, that's that joke, which I don't tell anymore. But yeah, that was the joke that I thought of while I was sitting at that funeral.
Not to personalize this, but I do ride a bike a lot, and I ride down Seven Bridges Road in Duluth, mm-hmm, and it's, mm-hmm, it's a wonderful ride. But coming down, it is taking a bit of a chance if there's gravel on the road or something like that. And I wonder about that statement. I have that statement playing in my head sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, really do love that ride. Mm-hmm. But is that something that I want someone to put in my obituary? He died doing what he wanted to do? Mm-hmm. He didn't want to die. Not yet. I got, mm-hmm, things I still, mm-hmm, want to do. Mm-hmm. So there's my commentary on your commentary. After that joke, where did you go from there?
So where did I go? Well, then I waited about 10 years to get up the courage to actually get on stage. I would go to open mics and, mm-hmm, I would watch the other comedians. I went up to about 12 or 13 open mics before I finally got the courage to get up on stage. And I'll be honest, the thing that got me up on stage eventually was watching the other comics and realizing that even if I got up on stage and didn't say a single word, I'd still be funnier than some of them. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I couldn't be the worst. I mean, there's really, if anyone wants to go to an open mic, you know, we do the open mic at 8 o'clock on Thursday nights at Dublin's, and we'll let anybody on stage. And if you want to see the sausage of comedy being manufactured, that's the place to do it.
All right. So I want to go back to the tech part for a second here.
Sure.
You sewed internet.org, the URL, to Mark Zuckerberg. Okay, you didn't just call him up to do that. So how did that happen?
There's the true story, and then there's the story people want to hear. The story
he called for eyeglasses, and you, yeah, were in Duluth at the Holiday Center. Yes,
yeah,
right.
The story people want to hear is that he called me up. I turned him down. He put me on his private jet and flew me to San Francisco. And we were on the rooftop of his house overlooking the Golden Gate Bridge. And he pulls out a briefcase of cash and he pushes it towards me. And he says, if you take the briefcase, the domain is mine. But that's not really what happened. What happened was his attorney sent me an email. I had no idea it was Mark Zuckerberg that was making the offer. And he offered me $1,000 for internet.org. And I said, no, I like owning the internet. I love owning internet.org because my email address was me@internet.org. And so I just liked the idea that I was the owner of the internet. And so
you
I
got
loved,
it before Al Gore did. Yeah, right.
So I loved having the domain. I loved it. And then he said, well, I'll give you $50,000 for it. And I, you know, that wakes you up. But I still said no. And then the price kept escalating. And eventually there just came a point where I said, okay, it's yours.
And when did you find out who it really was?
I did not find out until after the deal closed and it was released on CNN and Yahoo. I didn't realize who the purchaser was until after Mark announced it.
So are you telling me the joke was on you? Boom, boom.
Well, I don't know. I got a pretty good price for it. And you know, had I known it was Mark Zuckerberg, I think the price still would have been right around the same, but I really would have preferred to try to get away where I can partner with him. That would have been the leverage I would have used. I said, you know what? I'll give you the domain. Let's work together. That would have been my...
That's right. So do you own meta.org?
I do not. I think they were ahead of the game on that one.
All right. Where can we find you and what's next?
I have a website at chaos.com, which is spelled XAOS.com. So X like X-ray, A like Alpha, O like Oscar, S like Sierra. But I pronounce it chaos because I think that has a comedy feel to it. So you can see a few short videos. I don't put too many videos on there, but there's a couple of short ones. And what's next? I just want to keep getting better. If I start to look at how good other comedians are, it's easy to get discouraged. So what I just try to do is I just try to keep writing jokes, just stay focused on getting better and improving myself.
All right. We've been speaking with tech entrepreneur turned comedian Danielle Trallo of Duluth. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, the regional news and review. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
So, Rick, the tall ships are coming back to the area, but they won't necessarily make it all the way to the Duluth Superior Harbor.
Not this year. The Festival of Sail, commonly known as Tall Ships, is moving to two harbors for next year's event. Due to construction that's happening in Duluth, the seawall behind the Duluth Entertainment Convention Center. So rather than postponing the 2022 festivities, the event organizers approached the Two Harbors mayor, Chris Swanson, who offered to host the festival along their storefront. So the town of less than 4,000 people is planning to expect approximately 100,000 visitors over the three-day period scheduled for August 4 through 7. But Swanson said a group of community members have already formed to discuss logistics, such as traffic control. Regular meetings and messaging with businesses will pick up early next year. Swanson already knows they'll need to utilize parking space north of town up Lake County Highway 2, where shuttles will pick up festival goers and transport them down to the waterfront. A record number of 12 ships will appear in the upcoming festival in Two Harbors.
That sounds like a big deal for Two Harbors. Long before those ships get here, or to Two Harbors anyway, the icebreakers are going to be out working on the lake.
Yes, as Twin Ports enters winter season without a home-based icebreaker, the U.S. Coast Guard's regional headquarters affirmed this week that the port would still be covered, according to Mark Gill, who's the director of vessel traffic services at the Sioux Locks in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. Cutters capable of breaking ice will be moved to Duluth Superior in the weeks prior to the end of the shipping season around January 15. And again, before the reopening of the Sioux Locks at the start of the 2022-23 season around March 25. The Coast Guard plans to platoon 140-foot cutters to maintain open water in the shipping canals. The Twin Ports is without a Coast Guard vessel since the cutter Alder departed for a year of maintenance in July, preceding its move to the San Francisco Bay Area. Last December, the cutter Biscayne Bay filled in breaking ice in the Twin Ports while the Alder was on rest. The Twin Ports can expect the arrival of the new cutter, named Spar, to home port in Duluth sometime in 2022, replacing the Alder as the local buoy tender and part-time icebreaker.
All right. Well, a minute ago you mentioned construction of the seawall. For those of you using cars instead of watercraft, you've got an update on the can of worms next to the water, or maybe there's just two or three worms that you can see at the I-35-535 interchange.
Yes, drivers can still expect to see construction going on this winter with that interchange. The curving four-lane I-35 bypass through Lincoln Park will remain through next fall, allowing the Minnesota Department of Transportation and its contractors to finish demolition of old bridges and then move on to new work. Once all the bridges and elevated sections of ramps and interstate are down, new piers and bridge substructures will be constructed for the new alignments during the coldest months of the year. And again, this project is a $343 million reconstruction of Interstate 35 through Duluth-Lincoln Park neighborhood.
All right. Well, Danny, heading down 535 to 53 and to Spooner, what's the latest on the evacuation a couple weeks ago at Spooner Middle School?
Well, first off, the school remains in remote learning mode, and they've been that way basically since there was that detection of that strong epoxy-like odor around mid-November, and that caused around 60 staff and students to seek medical treatment. And parents have reported at least a couple of students were hospitalized due to that. And they've done lots of testing related to this, you know, some initial testing for carbon monoxide levels showed that those were all falling within normal levels, but they've been doing additional environmental sampling with local officials and various environmental companies, and they're expecting to have the results of that sampling sometime by the end of next week. And until then, the school remains closed, and they will continue with online learning throughout that time.
Well, on a larger public health front, how's the COVID situation faring now with the new variant?
Yeah, well, obviously, there's a lot of concern with the Omicron variant. And just this week, they detected the first case out in California. And so I think that a lot of public health officials are monitoring to see if this is going to pop up here in Wisconsin. So far, there haven't been any reports of that. But while this is all happening, you know, Wisconsin hospitals are seeing a surge of COVID-19 patients. On Monday this week, the Wisconsin Hospital Association reported more than 1,400 hospitalizations, and that's an increase of 60% since the end of October. And we're seeing the highest number of people being taken care of in ICU units across the state since December of last year. In fact, in northwestern Wisconsin, which covers about 26 hospitals, there are no intensive care unit beds currently available. And so hospital staff are feeling very stressed right now. There's been people who have been diverted to other facilities to receive care. These hospitals are resorting to staffing agencies and travel nurses to try and care for people right now. And largely, these people who are coming in with COVID-19 and requiring intensive care are largely unvaccinated and often younger. And they're requiring stays longer in intensive care before they either recover or unfortunately pass away. And so public health officials are advising people to practice COVID-19 safety protocols. You know, they understand the fatigue that everyone feels throughout this, but they're urging vaccination, get your booster shots, saying that this is the only way that they can try to drive these numbers down within Wisconsin hospitals.
All right. And as we've said several times, it's not going away. Wisconsin's deer hunting season is concluded. How was it this year?
So the good news for hunters in northern Wisconsin is that they actually had more success this year than last. Northern Wisconsin was the only part of the state to see the deer harvest grow, and it grew by about 9.3%. It wasn't as great as last year for the entire state. Data from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources shows that hunters killed 8% fewer deer overall during the 2021 gun deer season. Hunters registered just under 176,000 deer over the nine-day season, and that's down about 9% from the five-year average. But if you kind of down by counties, Ashland, Bayfield, Burnett, Iron, Sawyer, Washburn counties, they all saw an increase. Douglas County, the same. But a lot of these counties actually saw their harvest still below the five-year average. And so that's concerning for the Wisconsin DNR. You know, in the past, there's been a decline of hunter participation, fewer people out getting licenses, and there's just changing habits too, where people are either hunting earlier during archery and crossbow seasons or pursuing other opportunities. So, but the DNR says that license sales are still strong and they're looking to, you know, recruit and retain more hunters as time goes on.
All right. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior Base reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at DuluthNewsTribune.com and at WPR.org. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Our theme song is written and performed by Bruce Nelson, and not me, as some of you seem to think. But we leave you with music that's become a Hanukkah favorite of the show from the E.L. Vilner Big Band of New York, who a few years ago graciously shared an album of the most rollicking Hanukkah music I've ever heard. Enjoy the holiday and stay safe, everyone.